Week 9 of the Big 12 football season is in the books, and another great weekend for the underdogs, not just against the spread, but also, surprisingly, straight up. I'm Pete Mundo. Heartland College Sports is where you find us covering the entire Big 12. Thank you for being here, for joining us as a part of the show. As always, we are putting a bow on the month of October in the college football season. Cannot believe it. And we are going to get to all seven Big 12 games from the weekend. Welcome in. If you are new, hit that subscribe button. That way you never miss a show. Tim Brando was on last week. You can go back and watch that or listen to that. And you can hit that like button on this video. We rack them up by the hundreds. It takes you a second. And it's a big way to make a difference on this show, which is always free. We just want to keep growing. And you are how we do that. So thank you so much. Welcome in. And if you're on the podcast, drop that 5-star rating and review. We appreciate you doing that. We are right around the 800 mark for those. So keep those coming in as well. Okay, let's talk about it. Week 9 of the Big 12 football season. And let's start in order. We'll just go in order of games that meant the most. And I will start at the top with BYU beating UCF 37-24. Now, you may look at that game and say, wow, UCF was in it. No. No, they weren't. BYU is 8-0. UCF has just completely unraveled. It is a total and utter mess right now in Orlando. And guess what? I'm looking at this team, and I'll get to more of it, but that fan base, rightfully so, not happy with Gus Malzahn. But let me start off with BYU, who was in complete control of this game on Saturday. 37-24 does not do it justice. BYU owned this game on both sides of halftime. Before halftime, they have a quick touchdown grab. Chase Roberts gets a 62-yard bomb from Jake Retzlaff. That puts them up 24-10. And then on the back end, first drive of the second half, what does BYU do? They score another touchdown. They go up 31-10. And that felt like, in many respects, the nail in the coffin for the BYU Cougars, or for the UCF Knights against the BYU Cougars. BYU put that nail in the coffin. There we go. And you look at the game itself, and you saw a UCF team that really, once again, all season long, couldn't throw the ball until they got Dylan Risk in there. And this guy showed pretty good at throwing the ball. Ja'Kari Brown, not a guy who's going to be passing it all that well. And you've now gone through three quarterbacks at UCF. So Dylan did a nice job all in all. He finished 6-10 with a touchdown pass, which, hey, when you get that stat line as a UCF quarterback, you might as well be Patrick freaking Mahomes at this point with the way the quarterbacks have been playing there in Central Florida. But for BYU, they continue to do it all and make it look easier than it really is. They continue to be doubted as well. They were a 2 to 2.5 point favorite in this game, and they owned it from start to finish. And that's what was most impressive about this turnout for BYU. They're going on the road. We know the numbers that teams that move at least two time zones to the east don't play as well. And all the odds, once again, the wise guy money, the sharp money was against BYU again. Instead, they win. They obviously cover the spread because they were an underdog. And they do it in basically blowout fashion, right? I mean, that's exactly how this was done. And it was the second drive for BYU. They're up 7-0. They're marching down the field on their second drive. And there was the fake field goal attempt. I want to say it was from maybe 40 yards out. And Will Ferrin ran it for 8 yards for a first down to keep the drive going. Now, later in that drive, they end up kicking a field goal anyway. But it was that moment where I said, it just feels like a team where everything is clicking so well and so effectively right now for this BYU team. And that's how you end up 8-0. That's how you end up 7-1 against the spread. And you continue to be doubted, but you continue to win games. And now you go into a bye week. And as long as this team does not read its own press clippings for the next couple of weeks, they are well positioned to win every single game the rest of the way. And in 2 weeks, they'll be going to Utah for a holy war matchup that we all thought was going to be reversed. We all thought Utah might be the undefeated team. and BYU might be the one playing upset. Now, it's Utah, with nothing left to play for, playing the upset spoiler against BYU in an undefeated season. And that is going to be an epic scene in Salt Lake City coming up in a couple of weeks. Now, for UCF, they're 3-5 overall. They are potentially going to miss a bowl game. They were chanting "Fire Gus" in Orlando yesterday. It is not a good scene right now. This team has way too much talent to be playing as poorly as it is. And yes, that does come back on the coaching staff. I mean, it's a sloppy team. It's a team that randomly seems to showboat. If I got to see another UCF player celebrate a first down when you're down two or three scores and you're in the midst of a multi-game losing streak, and blow my brains out, for crying out loud. It's embarrassing. It's absolutely embarrassing. They lose the turnover battle again. I mean, they're not good on third down. Too many penalties. And outside of running the ball, what do they do well? Not much. This is a gut check season for Gus Malzahn. I am not willing to say that he's not the guy because he's recruiting very well, but Gus has always recruited well. The question is, can you develop him? And can you make guys better? And then what are your in-game adjustments? And those continue to lack for UCF right now. So there is a lot of issues there, and they've got to figure that thing out and figure it out fast. Let's go to the next game here in the Big 12 Conference. When it comes to order of importance, well, let's be honest. Sunflower Showdown, Kansas State beating Kansas 29-27. So that game, man, that is wild. The streak continues. KU has not beaten K-State in football since 2008, and it looked like it was going to happen on Saturday night in Manhattan. I'm watching that game, and late in the game, Kansas State's down three, or they're down one, and they're trying for a field goal with about 4 minutes left, fourth down and maybe seven. And they elect to go for it from, give or take, the KU 40-yard line. I thought that Kleiman was going to punt it. He had three timeouts plus the two-minute timeout. He'd get his defense out there, and he said, you know what? Let's do it that way. Let's give him a long field, play field position. He said, no, I'm not doing it. He goes for it on fourth down. They miss it. KU gets the ball back. He says, okay, I got to use my timeouts here. KU runs Devin Neal on first down. And then Jalen Daniels scrambling, trying to make a play. The ball gets popped out. K-State recovers. They take it down the field where they need to get it to. And Chris Tennant hits a 51-yard field goal to put K-State up 29-27 with under 2 minutes left. And then K-State just brought the house every single play. Daniels couldn't do anything. Fumbled it out of bounds on fourth down. Game, set, match. K-State wins. But to be honest, I thought KU played better all night long. Like, don't get me wrong, K-State won the game. But this has got to be so frustrating for KU and the fan base because, first off, it's another blown fourth quarter lead, and KU felt like, watching the game, they were the better team. Now, Avery Johnson had some great plays, some clutch plays when it mattered. Giddens had himself a big night. But if you were just to take the records off the table, you would say these teams are pretty evenly matched, and on Saturday night, it was actually, you'd probably argue, KU that was the better team in this game. Jalen Daniels could do whatever he wanted down the field. And by the way, his wide receivers missed a couple of wide open shots. There was one from Skinner, I think, that really stands out to me, where he should have had another 6 points on the board. So I said that K-State's secondary was going to be an issue, and it has been really the weakness of this team all season long. And with Jalen Daniels looking better after the bye week against Houston, I thought he could carry it over into this game against K-State, and that's exactly what he did. I know he had the fumbles late. I get it, but take those out. That's a guy trying to make a play in a big spot. Daniels actually had himself a very good night for the Kansas Jayhawks. But K-State does what winning teams do. They figured out a way to get it done. And that's exactly what you saw on Saturday. And Avery Johnson continues to have these moments and just figure out a way, not always with his arm, not always with his legs, using his teammates to figure out a way to get down the field and get a win. And that's what programs like Kansas State do under Chris Klieman. The Colorado game, same thing, right? You find a way at the end. That one was on the road. That was even tougher. This one at home against a rival with nothing to lose. You're down by a point. They've got the ball at near midfield, and you pop it loose. And you hit the other guy hard, and you make it happen. And that is a testament to just the program overall that Chris Klieman has built and carried off of Bill Snyder with. It has been beyond impressive to watch, and probably one of the more unappreciated performances, not the game itself, but just Chris Klieman at Kansas State. You're following the legend, and it has been one of the more underappreciated tenures in all of college football when you stack it up. So for Kansas State, getting out with that victory when you're not playing your best, when your secondary was getting, you know, having its issues throughout the game, and even your running defense wasn't great. K-State came in with the best running defense in the Big 12 on a yards per game basis. They gave up almost 200 on the ground, but they got it done. And in crunch time, they really made a huge difference in this game, and it was a heck of a lot of fun to watch. What a great game for the state of Kansas. What an awesome rivalry it continues to be in the Big 12. Underappreciated as well, but just outstanding start to finish. And for K-State, that was huge. A loss, and K-State would have very much been behind the eight ball at 3-2 in the Big 12 going into the final month of the season. But now they're right there. BYU's 5-0, Iowa State's 4-0. K-State and Colorado are 4-1. K-State still plays Iowa State. So if K-State wins out, they are in the Big 12 championship game because they'll have a head-to-head over Iowa State and they'll have a head-to-head over Colorado. So if K-State wins out, they are playing in the Big 12 championship game and they are playing for a spot in the college football playoff. So that's how it's shaping up right now for the Wildcats. And for KU, you scratch your head right now. You have led every single game except for one in the fourth quarter. And the only one you didn't lead in the fourth quarter was the TCU game. And you led that game until about the two-minute mark in the third quarter when TCU had that 89-yard punt return for a touchdown, J.P. Richardson. So you're sitting there and you're like, this is the best 2-6 team in the country, but you're still 2-6. It might be the best 2-6 team all time, but you're still 2-6. And that's what's so frustrating right now if you're a Kansas Jayhawk fan, because this season had so much potential, such massive expectations, biggest expectations in a decade and a half. And it has to come back to the coaching staff. The talent's there. But when you blow fourth quarter leads like this, you can't just say, I don't think we have the horses. You've had the horses for most of the game. Clearly, you're leading in the fourth quarter, and then you blow it. So something's not connecting. I mean, Lance Leipold's a great coach. I'm not taking anything away from him and what he's rebuilt at KU. But the coaching staff has to take the blame for how these late game situations have played out. It's not like an outlier. It's not one here. It's not one there. It's nonstop all the time. Every single week is the same old story for KU. So that has got to be difficult in and of itself.
We know there's power in our numbers. We've seen the impact we make when we stand together. So let's stand with candidates who represent us in Washington, D.C., not extremist Bernie Moreno. If elected, Moreno can make the Radical Project 2025 playbook a reality, endangering our democracy and our hard-won rights and freedoms. Together, we can stop Moreno and his allies from reversing everything our ancestors fought for: Social Security, voting rights, and more. Sherrod Brown always stands up for the well-being of our community, capping the price of life-saving drugs like insulin and cracking down on predatory landlords jacking up rents in Black neighborhoods. Black power is in our votes. Let's use it today. Vote now to re-elect Senator Sherrod Brown.
Paid for by Ask Me People, AskMePeople.org, which is responsible for the content of this ad. Not authorized by any candidate or candidate's committee.
Did you know Tide has been upgraded to provide an even better clean and cold water? Tide is specifically designed to fight any stain you throw at it, even in cold. Butter? Yep. Chocolate ice cream? Sure thing. Barbecue sauce? Tide's got you covered. You don't need to use warm water. Additionally, Tide Pods let you confidently fight tough stains with new ColdZyme technology. Just remember, if it's got to be clean, it's got to be Tide.
I'm Pete Mundo on Heartland College Sports. Thank you for being here as we continue to recap and react to Week 9 of the Big 12 football season. We so appreciate you hitting that thumbs up right below the video and subscribe if you have not yet. So much great content coming your way here around college football and around the Big 12 in the weeks ahead. And before you know it, we're talking hoops here as well at Heartland College Sports. Next up, let's go down the list here when it comes to games that mattered. Colorado beating Cincinnati 34-23. My first reaction to this is Travis Hunter should win the Heisman Trophy. This guy didn't just have a great game at wide receiver, 9 catches, 153 yards, 2 touchdowns, but also he continues to be a difference maker on the other side of the ball. Only had a couple of tackles, but 4 passes defended. They don't want to go his way. When they do, he makes a play. This guy is the best two-way player in a generation and the best player in college football right now and the biggest difference maker in college football right now, hands down. Even Shedeur Sanders saying after the game, he wants Travis to win the Heisman, and Travis should win the Heisman. But what I see is a team that keeps gaining confidence, keeps getting better in the trenches. Yeah, I mean, this team is never going to be a run-first offense. We know that. But you're seeing them more confident in the running game. You're seeing them at least use the running game to keep defenses on its toes. And you're seeing the offensive line give Shedeur more time. And he's looking better and better. I mean, when he gets time, he was 25 of 30 last night. So he's just looking better. Cincinnati didn't really get to him on the defensive side, only 1 sack. So they keep doing a better job on that front as well, which is a great sign for this team because that's where they were weakest on the offensive line. And that's a couple of games in a row now where the offensive line is really holding its own. And then defensively, they continue to make some noise. And they continue to just place really solid ball. Cincinnati came in 4 points away from being undefeated. And Colorado basically owned this game from start to finish. The final score makes it look a little closer than this game actually was. It wasn't all that close of a game. Colorado had it in control from start to finish. And if you're a Colorado fan, you're sitting there right now and you're like, okay, we're 6-2. We're bowl eligible. But more than that, we are going in to the last month of the season in contention for a Big 12 championship, which means we're in contention for a spot in the college football playoff. And I didn't think that was going to happen. Did you? Did you think that we were going to be sitting here talking about Colorado playing for a Big 12 championship and a college football playoff? Maybe some of you did. Maybe the diehard Colorado fan did. We knew they had the top-end talent. The question is, did they have the depth? I didn't think they had the depth, to be totally honest. But they've got enough of the pieces. They've stayed healthy enough. And that is working out in an impressive way for them. They lead the Big 12 in sacks on the defensive side of the ball in 5 conference games. And you're also seeing, once again, Shedeur Sanders get more protection over the last couple of weeks. And that means the offensive line is starting to come together. So that's a great sign in the right direction for this Colorado program. And for Cincinnati, listen, they were underdogs going into this game. There was always an opportunity and an expectation, I believe, that this team was going to come back down to earth a little bit. They are not in that top tier of Big 12 teams this year. But you know what? They should be in a place where when you look back on this season, 7, dare I say 8 wins, based on what happened last year in year 1 in the Big 12, this is a massive step in the right direction for Scott Satterfield and this program at Cincinnati. Things are continuing to progress. And that's how you got to look at this year. I know you were hoping and you were dreaming about being 4-1, entering November with a chance to be in contention for a Big 12 championship, but that was always going to be a bit of a long shot. But overall, this has been a very good season and definitely a step in the right direction for Cincinnati. Now, you look around the Big 12, and what else do we have here? Oh, let's go to Oklahoma State Baylor. Baylor beats Oklahoma State 38-28. And listen, Dave Aranda has now won two straight. They won a home game in the Big 12 for the first time in a couple seasons, amazingly. And the seat is still warm, but Dave Aranda's seat was never as hot as the fans wanted it to be. And now he's won two in a row, and he's got a very good recruiting class for 2025. That still matters. And you look down the stretch, and they have winnable games. TCU, West Virginia, Houston, Kansas. They can split those. Things break right. They can win 3-1 over those four games. But they go 2-2. They're going to a bowl game. Dave Aranda's not getting fired if he goes to a bowl game. He's not. It's not going to happen. And what you're seeing here is a Baylor team that suddenly is playing like the Baylor team we thought they could be. It's like that Colorado game screwed them up. They had Colorado on the ropes on the road early in the Big 12 season, and they lost it in part due to a Hail Mary at the end of regulation, right? And it screwed them up for 3 weeks. But now they're looking like the Baylor team we thought they could be. We thought they had talent-wise. And that's what you're starting to see here, led by Sawyer Robertson. Fine, it's not Daquan Finn, but frankly, Sawyer Robertson just played the best back-to-back football games we've seen from a Baylor quarterback in years. That's how good he's been the last 2 weeks against Texas Tech and now against Oklahoma State. He's thrown for 8 touchdowns the last couple of weeks, 1 interception. I mean, he's run for a score, so he's playing outstanding. And that's what you want to see from this guy. And the defense also is hustling and is ball hawking and getting to where it needs to be. Now, Oklahoma State put up a lot of yards through the air. That's indisputable. But you saw a very aggressive Baylor defense as well. 9 tackles for loss, 3 sacks. And all in all, this Baylor defense is getting around the field and flying around the field. They're going to take chances. They're going to give up yards, but they're going to stay aggressive. And that's what you saw from this team on Saturday afternoon against Oklahoma State. And the Cowboys are a mess. Oklahoma State is a joke. This team gave up 345 rushing yards. Baylor ran for 9 yards a carry. The tackling was atrocious. It was pathetic. It was words I don't want to say because I like to keep this a family-friendly show. Oklahoma State was an absolute joke on that side of the ball. And just to show you how bad it's been, Oklahoma State is giving up 307 rushing yards per game in 5 Big 12 matchups. You have to try to give up 307 rushing yards per game in 5 conference games. It's like they're playing with 10 guys out there. That is 120 yards worse per game than anybody else in the Big 12 when it comes to rushing defense. It is horrific. They're giving up almost 7 yards a carry on the ground. They gave up over 9 yards a carry on Saturday rushing. And Mike Gundy alluded to it after the game, but holy cow, this is a pathetic performance from the Oklahoma State Cowboys on both sides. I know everybody wants to get rid of Casey Dunn at offensive coordinator, but man, come on. Brian Nardo is now in his second year, right? And he has not been a good defensive coordinator this season at all for Oklahoma State. I know Colin Oliver's out. Like, I get it. But, man, there's no way you lose one guy and you start giving up 307 rushing yards a game. That's just embarrassing. And that's, frankly, what this program is right now. Embarrassing. And Gundy's got to figure out a way to get this thing squared away and real fast because they are looking like a team that is not going to end up playing for a bowl game at this point. They're 3-5. They got 4 games left. Arizona State, TCU, Texas Tech, and Colorado. They got to win 3 of those 4 to end up in a situation where they are in a bowl game. And I just do not see how that ends up happening. So Baylor getting a very good win, and these two programs feel like they are trending in very different directions right now in the Big 12. Next up, as we roll through it, how about TCU beating Texas Tech 35-34? So talk about blown opportunities. TCU finds itself in a hole in this game. I mean, it looks like Texas Tech is going to run away with this thing, right? Go back to this game, and Tech's flying high, and they find themselves in a 31-14 lead early in the third quarter, and then the defense falls apart. That's what ended up happening in this game. TCU scored three straight touchdowns on three straight drives, and the drives were pretty fast. 9-play drive, 6-play drive, and a 2-play drive to get those 21 points real fast for the Horned Frogs. So everybody wants to look at Texas Tech and look at Kittley and the offense, and they want to look at that fumble at the end of the game where Will Hammond, who was in for the injured Baron Morton at quarterback, does a spin move into the line of scrimmage, gets hammered, and fumbles the ball. And now I agree in that spot. Would I prefer to give the ball to a stud running back that I have in Taj Brooks over a freshman quarterback? Yes, absolutely. I think it's fair to question Kittley in that spot. But this game was not lost because of the offense. Hammond actually played pretty well. This game was lost because of the defense. That's why this game was lost for Texas Tech. It's a Texas Tech defense that is second worst in the Big 12 in yards given up, ahead of only Oklahoma State. They don't really do anything all that well. They're better against the run than they are the pass. They're dead last in the Big 12, giving up 325 yards per game. So let's look at the defense before we start screaming about the play calling on offense and a freshman quarterback just bad timing, spin move into a 320-pound lineman, and the ball comes loose. I understand the frustrations of that play call. But you're up 31-10 in this game. That's on the other side of the ball. That got whatever, just started missing assignments, got lazy, rested on its laurels, thought the game was over. I don't know. But no matter what, that's where I'm putting the blame for this Texas Tech loss. Not on the offensive play calling late in the game when you're losing. You built up a 21-point lead, for crying out loud, right? So that's what I'm looking at. And now TCU has put together a couple of straight wins out of the bye week. They had that bad loss to Houston, and then they come out of the bye week, and they beat Utah, and now they beat Texas Tech, and suddenly they're 5-3. I don't think they're in the Big 12 race at 3-2 in conference play. I don't think that for a second. But certainly, they're looking much better than what you saw last year. The heat is off Sonny Dykes, although if you're a TCU fan, I would still just keep an arm's length on this thing. Let's see how it plays out over the next couple of weeks. I wouldn't say you've got it all figured out. You don't. But definitely two steps in the right direction. But TCU also has got to figure out how to either avoid some of the big holes they find themselves in or also blowing big leads. Both of those things have happened to them this season. UCF game stands out, big blown lead there. They lose 35-34. And then Texas Tech, the big comeback win. Ironically, they win 35-34. There's a coincidence for you. And keep getting Savion Williams the ball. It's like TCU didn't realize what they had in this guy. Yeah, you got a good one. Give him the ball. Feed him the ball. Utilize him in every aspect of the game. Do it, because the guy's freaking talented and he's damn good. All right, so that is a good win for TCU, and it is a bad loss for Texas Tech because it gives them a second straight loss. It basically takes them out of contention for a Big 12 title. And it's a defense now the last couple of weeks that has given up nearly 1,000 yards in offense to Baylor and TCU. And that is inexcusable if you're Joey McGuire and this coaching staff. Let's continue on Heartland College Sports. I'm Pete Mundo, and let's get to what have we not talked about yet. All right, two more games to talk about in the Big 12. Let's begin with West Virginia beating Arizona 31-26. So West Virginia is without Garrett Green. Jaheim White ends up playing. They're down a defensive back as well. I mean, they've got pieces missing all over the place. They're going 2,500 miles west to play Arizona. And they were in control of this game. With Nico Maricol and Markiol, excuse me. I heard his name all day yesterday, and I just can't get it. So I like Nico. It's a great first name, as is. But Nico Maricol, which it just doesn't make sense to me that the way the last name goes with the way it's spelled, the whole deal. But whatever. Nico filled in admirably. Had a very good game, tough spot, on the road, conference play, and he looked darn good. Now, I'm not saying Garrett Green should be losing his job or anything like that, but I think he got a future there with Nico. And overall, I thought he played very well, given the circumstances that he was handed. And getting that first drive where they took it down the field and kicked the field goal, and then Arizona fumbles, they get a touchdown, they're quickly up 10-0. And there were two long drives as well. I want to say their first two drives took up like 20 plays. That really, I think, settled down Nico in that spot on the road. It was the perfect start for a young guy getting his start at quarterback. And then they go up, you know, 17-7, and you just feel like this team is in control. That's the lead they took in the halftime. They extend it with the touchdown drive, the first play of the second half, and the game felt like it was effectively over. I know Arizona made it close there at the end. Like, I get it. They got a couple of late touchdowns. They had it down to a one-score game there. But I'm sure West Virginia fans were sweating it out because of what you guys have been through. But I'm just telling you, for your sake, I was not sweating it out because I felt like the Mountaineers were going to get it done. But this game was one of those 6 o'clock Central Fox Sports 1 games. So you've got some games ending at 2:30, the 2:30 Central. You've got other games about to start. So there's a lot of moving parts in that window. You've got the KU K-State game on. You've got Colorado-Cincinnati starting around when that game is ending. So a lot of moving parts in that one. But it was West Virginia getting a 31-26 win. And now this Arizona team is spiraling. Here's the crazy part, too. All year long, we've said that it's Arizona's offense that has completely held this team back. Right? Well, they actually had themselves, for the most part, at least passing the ball based on how the season's gone. Fifita had a pretty good game based on what he's been doing. McMillan had an incredible game. Got over 200 receiving yards. Like, that's what you expected this year from Arizona, those kinds of stat lines. But then, when you finally get something from the offense, the defense isn't there for Arizona. So all the success from last year feels like it's completely gone in year one under Coach Brennan. And if Arizona's not careful, this program can go down to being a dumpster in the Big 12 conference based on how this league is shaping up, where there's no bottom feeder. There's also no clear blue blood or anything like that at the top, but there's no bottom feeder either right now. And you can quickly find yourself in a spot where you are the bottom feeder. So Arizona goes on the road. They will play UCF next week, and I guess somebody has to win that game, right? UCF's lost 5 in a row. Arizona's lost 4 in a row. Someone's got to win the game between Arizona and UCF. I mean, maybe we can just call it a draw because they've both been so bad. I'm not sure anybody deserves to win that game, but somebody will win that game on Saturday in Orlando. And the winner shouldn't feel good about themselves, but at least they can breathe a sigh of relief. The loser, let's just put it this way. I would not want to be the loser between Arizona and UCF next Saturday. No thanks. And then for West Virginia, I know that this season is not the season that any Mountaineer fan expected. They're 4-4. They're not totally out of the Big 12 race. I don't think they're in it, but I guess they're not totally out of it yet. They've got to go to Cincinnati in a couple of weeks. They have a bye week now, so Neil Brown at least gets a bye week. It's just the classic West Virginia deal. They beat who they're supposed to beat. They lose who they're supposed to lose to. I know they were technically underdogs at Arizona, But once again, the underdogs are doing very well in the Big 12 so far this season. The underdogs, to give you some perspective here, went 5-2 against the spread on Saturday in Week 9 in the Big 12. The underdogs are 24-15 on the season in the Big 12. And the underdogs went 3-4 straight up on Saturday, and they're now 18-21 on the season straight up. That's how unbelievable this year has been in the Big 12. Vegas cannot pinpoint this league. Vegas has no idea how to handicap the Big 12 this season. It is unbelievable how out of touch the odds makers are with what's actually happening in this conference. And it's not really their fault. It's just this is the most unpredictable conference in America, bar none. And that's what you're seeing play out each and every Saturday in the Big 12. And you got more of that in Tucson as well. Last but not least on the games, Houston beats Utah 17-14. So let me just say this. And let me ask this. Are Utah fans humbled? Now, we've met some amazing Utah fans on our forums. They're great guys and gals. I've done a bunch of Utah podcasts. They're great. I thought Utah would win the Big 12. But there was a sense in some quarters of the fan base of arrogance, of coming in here and just rolling right through this conference. And that was going to be easy. They'd win it. They'd quickly be a blue blood. And in some estimations and some predictions, they'd be off to the Big Ten in no time. Well, this team is not even close to that right now. They play pretty good defense, but they really don't do anything exceptionally when I'm watching this game and watching this team. You like the defense, but the offense is so ugly and so atrocious that there's just nothing going for it on that side of the ball. And that's the problem right now. Houston has a better record than Utah going into November in the Big 12. Houston's 2-3, Utah's 1-4. Please raise your hand if you had that. Please. Oh, none of you did? Okay. All right. I'm just making sure that nobody had Utah with a worse record in the Big 12 than Houston. Because I didn't, and I would say 99.9% of you didn't either. This program needs a reset in multiple places, it feels like. And if you're Houston, I thought that Houston would get better as the season went on with Willie Fritz. And you are seeing this guy now win 2 of 5 Big 12 games with mostly smoke and mirrors. The defense is pretty solid. You can't take that away from them. They get after it up front. They're aggressive. The offense leaves a lot to be desired. I don't know if Zion Chris is the guy for the long term, but he's got decent legs. He can throw it a little bit. He doesn't make too many mistakes. But they need a lot of work in the passing game and on that side of the ball in general. But man, Willie Fritz is making the most of something that is not all that good right now in Houston. But the story of this game remains Utah, unfortunately, for their sake, is an absolute mess. And I'm not convinced that this just turns around next year if you get Cam Rising back for his 27th year of college football. And in fact, if I'm Utah, I'm not doing that. I am not relying on Cam Rising, who is glass, to be my starting quarterback next year. I'm going into the portal. I'm finding somebody. I'm doing something. You have an open competition in the spring if you think that Isaac Wilson can still be that guy if he develops. If you like what you've seen from Brandon Rose, I don't know. But I cannot go back into another season hoping that Cam Rising is healthy. That would be the definition of insanity, which is doing the same thing over and over and over again and expecting a different result. To be clear, I love Utah fans. Like I said, they've been awesome on the Heartland College Sports forums. There's a portion, a loud, arrogant portion of them who thought the Big 12 would be a cakewalk. And obviously, that's not been the case. They've lost to new Big 12 teams, former Pac-12 teams that they know like Arizona and Arizona State. They've lost to old Big 12 teams like TCU, and now they've lost to a recent new Big 12 team in Houston. They have lost to every faction of Big 12 team that we have. And now they get a week off, and then it's the Holy War, then it's Colorado, then it's Iowa State. Three ranked games coming up from Utah. It's not impossible that this team is sitting there at 1-7 in the Big 12 going into UCF at the end of the regular season. And who would have ever seen that coming? I'm Pete Mundo on Heartland College Sports. Thank you guys, as always. If you have not yet subscribed to the channel, it makes a world of difference when you do that. All our stuff is free. We have great guests coming up. We had Tim Brando on last week. If you missed that, that's why you got to be subscribed. Hit the like button on the video. Hundreds of you do it every week. It genuinely makes a difference. Thank you so much. We'll talk to you soon at Heartland College Sports. I'm Pete Mundo. Have a great rest of your day, and go Big 12.